The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
God is real and he is completely in love with you because you are all here today. History has been made. Life has triumphed in an extraordinary way. And the light of the world, who is Jesus Christ, the author of life, his light has burned so very brightly within each and every one of you, irrespective of your specific beliefs, compelling you forward for one reason or another to stand together today and fight the noblest and worthiest cause possible, which is to allow the unborn the right to enter into the world and defeat those earthly forces that wish to destroy the very evidence of them.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That is Jonathan Romey from The Chosen. And I think, is it season three that's now? And season three just came out. People seem to love that series. I have yet to watch it. He was one of the speakers there along with Coach Dungy. I heard Coach Dungy's wife. I heard some of the other talks today as I was making my way into the studio. The Chosen, that's a whole other conversation. I'm going to reach out to Jonathan Romey. We'll have to get him on to talk about it. People seem to love it. I'm a little bit on the fence about whether to watch it or not. And I'll share with you why a little bit later. I've had a conversation with several people about it. But boy, those who do watch it, they're into it big, big time. Is the interpretation right? Is it good? Is it accurate? Is it well worth watching? Maggie, did you watch it? I don't know if you watched any of the seasons or not.
I have been watching it, yeah.
You have been watching it. So what are your thoughts on it?
Sorry, let me get my headphones on.
No problem. I'll say that again. What were your thoughts on it?
I think it's well worth a watch.
It is. So our other producer, Tom, he says he tried to watch it. He only watched like one episode, and he was like, it was hard to get into. Is it one of those things you need more than one episode to get hooked on, or is it?
I was hooked from the first episode, maybe because my story kind of resembled the first episode.
It's about Mary Magdalene.
Yeah. So, I was like, wow, this really speaks to me. But
that's awesome.
To each their own.
Yeah, there's a lot of people saying, hey, I don't even want you commenting. There's a few people on Facebook I've seen. Don't comment unless you've watched at least two episodes.
For sure.
So, I think it's great. I may have to check it out. I've yet to watch it, but they're on season three, and I know a lot of people love Jonathan Romey. In fact, somebody emailed the show and says, hey, why don't you get him on and let people ask him questions? So that was him at the March for Life, and we've got a lot to talk about today. Coming up a little later, I'll dive into to Tony Dungy, who's attending the March for Life. Have you heard about what happened to him? Oh, my gosh. He's been dubbed a right-wing extremist for going to the March for Life. Right? They want him taken off of television. I mean, here's the thing. And I said this earlier when I saw this news story come up. I was having a cup of coffee, and I said to my wife, why is it that everybody wants to tolerate their deviancy, their extremity, right? The ability to murder a child or to marry who they want to marry or have sex with who they want to have sex with, right? And it's supposed to be okay. Or they want to change their gender, whatever it is. And we got to say that's fine and we have to champion it, right? But they're completely intolerant of somebody who says, no, I think a child in the womb is actually a human being deserving of life, that child has an inalienable right to life. Why can't that be tolerated? There's no tolerance. You want them stripped from their job. You want them banned. It's ridiculous. So I'll talk a little bit about Tony Dungy. Also, there's a Philadelphia Flyer who refused to wear a rainbow jersey. And as a result of it, he's been attacked too. We'll get into that. We'll deal with a whole lot of other issues coming up today. So, hey, you're more than welcome to join me. Anytime you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We got a really mixed show coming up today and some great stuff to share with you. But, I thought maybe today, and if you've been to the March for Life, I'd love to know your attitudes on where we are. Are we winning the battle? How are things changing for you? Are people desensitized? What you think about the fall of Roe? We can talk about all sorts of stuff, but I saw something. Today's what, the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton, that horrific court decision. What I think is just an absolutely naked political move. The vice president, Kamala Harris, she's going to be not in Washington, right? Not in New York, not in Los Angeles, but in Tallahassee. Tallahassee. Dr. John Littell told me about this yesterday. He might be stopping by today, too. That's the capital of Florida. You know, is it a coincidence she's going there? From 10 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon Eastern time, she's going to be at a place called The Moon. It's a very popular concert and nightclub venue. And according to the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor, she's going to be pushing for national legislation to protect what's called abortion rights. Right? Of course she is. On the anniversary of the fall of Roe v. Wade, she's out pushing for abortion rights. I also heard something. I was driving in today. I don't know what station I heard it on, but yeah, Joe Biden says he wants to do everything he possibly can. And again, he's a Catholic. He's really not a Catholic. He can call himself a Catholic. I can call myself Chinese. Doesn't make me Chinese, right? You know, he calls himself a Catholic. He says he's going to do everything he can to enshrine, to ensure. He's going to throw the weight of his office behind the effort to kill children. That's what he wants to do, to make sure abortion remains, you know, legal in this country. So his right hand, Kamala Harris, is there in Tallahassee. And this has been the whole Biden-Harris administration focus. They're now moving to the state level to fight over these issues. And it's obvious, to me at least, that this is a dig at the governor there, at Ron DeSantis. And really the legislature of the Sunshine State, their effort to protect unborn life. And pro-life organizations in the area, they're going to be there for a very peaceful demonstration, and they're encouraging others to join them. I know Dr. Littell's going to stop by a little bit later. He says, Drew, I want to tell you a little bit more about it. I said, well, give us a ring. Feel free to join the conversation. But fortunately, the vice president's visit's not going to have an impact either on DeSantis or on the legislature. Right now, abortion is legal in Florida. It's legal up to 15 weeks after conception. And that, you know, that's the next area we have to focus on, try to protect life at all stages. But there is talk that they could pass what is called the heartbeat bill. We've talked about that in the past. That makes abortion illegal after the detection of a heartbeat. Now, let's take science out of all this, right? Let's just talk very candidly, you and I. Doesn't that make sense? I hear a heartbeat. That child must be alive, right? When my heart stops beating, there's real trouble, right? That's such a great line. You know, of demarcation, if you will. Why 15 weeks, right? Why not 16 weeks? Why not 10 weeks, right? The heartbeat bill makes sense. I think life should be protected for the moment of conception through natural death. But if you're going to start pushing the needle to a line, why not? Why not a heartbeat bill? And ballpark, that's probably what, about 6 weeks or so? If it happens, the Sunshine State is going to join about 17 other states that have their heartbeat bills or have banned abortion altogether. So I say bravo, Florida, go Governor DeSantis. You know, we need to do our part. If you're in that state, vote for life. Vote for life. Now, you know, that's a difficulty that we face in our country right now after the Supreme Court reversed the Roe and Doe and Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision last year with the Dobbs decision. And a little bit later, I want to talk about that because they apparently still haven't put a finger on who leaked that information. You know, they still haven't. A couple theories I have on it. I threw one very outlandish theory out a while ago. I'll throw it out again. But I've been thinking about it today, and there might be another theory that could explain how this got leaked. But why we don't have somebody, you know, and we've had an attack, you know, an assassination attempt on a Supreme Court justice as a result of this, I think it's outrageous. I think it's despicable that we do not have somebody in custody right now. We don't know who has done this, but it's now every state for itself. You know, here's where we are. It's every state for itself, and abortion laws, if you look at it, they run the gamut, right? They're all over the place, from being added to state constitutions like California to outright bans in Alabama, like places like Alabama. There's also states that have legalized it, but where cities and towns are saying it's illegal there. So New Mexico is considering legislation that would ban those cities and towns from doing that. So much for the principle of local government, right? Maggie, you got a little audio, right, from the Attorney General, Lynn Fitch, right, from Mississippi. She was at the rally today, right? Let me share a little bit of sound with you. And if you've been at the rally, I'd love to hear from you. Give us a quick call. You might be listening on the app or somewhere in the D.C., Baltimore, Philly. I don't know what part of the country you are. I'd love to get a sense for what you saw. Feel free to sound off. I'll open the phones at 888-914-9149. Here's a Mississippi Attorney General.
But this is not the end of our journey. Until we can give women when they are most vulnerable what they need and that their children need to thrive. And until we can make changes in our laws that reflect our compassion for all life, and until we can change hearts and minds in our fellow Americans, until then, life remains fragile and the embrace of human dignity remains aspirational. So it is our charge today in this new Dobbs era to channel that same determination and hope and prayer that has led you to these streets for 50 years. Use it to make changes. Use it to make changes to support women and children. Use it to support women when they are pregnant and when they are nurturing a young family. Use it to promote workplace flexibility. Use it to improve child support to make fathers equally responsible for their children. Use it to upskill, educate, and provide resources for women. And use it to fix adoption and foster care systems that fail our children.
There you have it. That, of course, is the Mississippi Attorney General, Lynn Fitch, today at the March rally. And there are a lot of great speakers that you'll be hearing throughout the day. And you know what I saw, too? I was surfing the channels very early in the morning. And normally there's zero coverage of the March for Life, even on conservative stations like, let's say, Fox, right? I think Fox News today actually had a presence down there. I think Rachel Campos Duffy was actually there. And I thought, man, this is really a change. Quite often there'll be hundreds of thousands of people that show up at these rallies, and you might get a quick 30-second blurb. Abortion protesters showed up at the nation's capital. They were a small gathering of people that, you know, they downplay the whole thing as opposed to what it really is. So to see the coverage, things are changing in the country. I'm telling you right now, life is winning. It's going to continue to win. We have the battle now at the state level, but I'm telling you, more and more people understand that this is the key issue of our day. And I think their eyes are open to the very fundamental truth that life begins, you know, at the moment of conception, and that's a child in the womb. All right, I'll take a few calls. If you are on hold, stay with me. I'll grab you. Barry is listening in. Barry's joining us. I see here that he was at the March for Life. Barry, thanks for joining us. Good to have you with me.
Hi, Drew. Yeah, I'm in D.C. right now.
Great.
And the march has just concluded for my part. I was kind of near the front. I'm here with Mary Fiorito, and I would say a tremendous-sized crowd based on what we saw. They kind of reversed it this year. Over the years, they went up Constitution to first. Yeah. This year, they marched on the south side, Independence, and then Madison, right, and then back up Independence, and kind of concluded near the Congress building. I think in terms of delivering the message that the Supreme Court has already rendered a decision, and so now we'll get to the Congress. And yeah, but like I said, the numbers were just
so. Yeah, how many people were there, Barry? What do you estimate? 100,000? 500,000?
What do you think? A couple hundred?
Yeah,
at least a couple hundred thousand.
Those people who predicted that the march would have fewer people this year were wrong.
Yeah,
you repeat that. I didn't get what Mary was saying. She said people predicted what?
Here, hold on.
Sure.
Go, say hi to Drew.
Hey.
Hey, Drew.
Great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. So what are you seeing down there, Mary? Are you seeing the couple hundred thousand people? What was predicted?
Well, you know, it was predicted that there would be fewer people this year at the march because Roe had been overturned.
Right.
And, you know, what would be the point, right?
Right.
But, Drew, if anything, there's more.
Wow.
And
praise
just
God.
Such a joyful crowd. And, you know, last year it was like 18 degrees, I think.
Yep.
Today it's just like 52 and sunny. Like, God has totally blessed us with beautiful weather. And just the joy in the air is palpable.
What about protesters? Anybody protesting or not so much anymore?
Yes, there were. Yeah, no, there was a healthy group right out in front of Congress, which is now where, of course, the march is ending. It's not ending at the Supreme Court anymore. We're going to march to Congress because that's where at least the federal legislative fight will be there. But no, there were some of your usual suspects, but they were drowned out by wonderful young age pro-lifers who had some terrific new chants this year, and so that was lots of fun. And you know, there's always really funny signs that people come up with, and so you know, I just the love and the joy was just really overcame the hatred and the anger that was there from the other side. And there weren't a ton of them, you know, maybe, I don't know, 30 or so that I saw. I just hope they don't get equal media time with all of the other hundreds of thousands of us.
I agree. I totally agree. Your thought on where we are right now? I mean, do you think we're winning this battle? Are attitudes in the country changing? And I know state legislatures around the country, I mean, we're divided. Clearly, right. California, Michigan, they want to enshrine this into their constitutions, where other states have banned it outright. So how do you see it?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. And like, as you suggest, it's part of it's kind of where you live in some respects. You do see the other side really using, frankly, lies and really trying to generate fear. I mean, making women think, for example, that if they have an ectopic pregnancy, they will not be able to be treated in a state where unborn lives are protected. And, you know, and as you would well know, Catholic hospitals have always treated ectopic pregnancies because treatment for an ectopic pregnancy is not a choice and it's not an abortion. It's neither of those things. It is a necessary medical intervention. And so I have never spoken more about ectopic pregnancies in the 25 years I've worked in the pro-life movement as I have in the last 9 months. So again, but if they have to resort to that, that shows you that they know that the only way to keep abortion legal for all 9 months and for any reason and taxpayer funded is to really frighten people, particularly women, into thinking they're going to die because of pro-life laws. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, when we saw when abortion was illegal in Ireland at the same time had the lowest maternal mortality rate in the world.
Wow.
And so we know that we can care for both mother and child. And what I like to see now, what's really interesting, is now that abortion has been taken off the table in some states, you're actually seeing state legislatures and social service agencies and other, you know, private companies and businesses saying, gosh, now we really are going to have to provide real maternal health care. Now we're going to have to provide maternal leave for our female employees and not just offer them the quick fix of the abortion. You know, abortion's been able to, again, just really give, unfortunately for women, here's, you know, your cheap, quick fix of an abortion. And it doesn't really address all of the other issues that are leading women to abortion clinics in the first place. And I think, I mean, as you well know, the repeat rate for abortions in the United States, at least as of last year, was 50%.
Wow.
So 50% of women having abortions have had at least one additional abortion. And if abortion solved problems, we wouldn't have a 50% repeat rate, would we?
That's so true. That is so true. Well, first of all, I'm glad you're down there. And tell Barry thank you, too, for making the call. I remember the last time I was at the march, it was brutally, brutally cold.
Yeah.
And I heard somebody today make the case, hey, since Roe has now been overturned, right? And we saw the Dobbs case come out. What was it, June, Mary, when that came out?
June 24th.
Feast of the Sacred Heart.
Case, but it had been leaked earlier. Right, yeah, so exactly, right.
Should we move this march to sometime when it's a little bit warmer, kids are off school, get bigger numbers to come out? Do you think moving this would be a good idea to move it to June 24th rather than, you know, this cold week of January?
Right. Well, actually, today, you would never know it today. It's beautiful. It's in the 50s. It's sunny. And it's just, it's fantastic. Like I said, you know, God bless this first post-Roe march with spectacular weather. We couldn't have asked for better weather. But you know, I had an interesting conversation with Jeannie Mancini, who is the president of the March for Life, and so who is responsible for coordinating all of it. And her perspective was that they did extensive polling among colleges and high schools and, you know, the other main stakeholders, the Knights of Columbus in the march.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people said, keep it in January. Do not move it.
Well, there's something as a Catholic about suffering, too, you know, about sacrifice.
Well, there you go. No. And,
you know,
and right. And I mean, I spoke Thursday morning to about 120 young men from two Jesuit high schools, Tampa Jesuit and New Orleans Jesuit. And they actually, before my talk, I was so impressed, the priests, the chaplains who are with them, you know, said, now let's pull out our pilgrimage books, and we're going to pray before this part of the pilgrimage. So they actually approach it as a kind of pilgrim experience, where the boys know they're making sacrifices. This isn't here, you know, they're not here to have a vacation.
Yep.
They're here to offer reparation. They're here to pray. They're here to grow in holiness and certainly grow in understanding of the pro-life issue. So I think a lot of people have always approached the march like that. Like, you know, this is a sacrifice, but we make this sacrifice because the people who are being most directly harmed don't have a voice. And we have to be that voice for them.
So, yeah, I got to ask you before I let you go, too. And if you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. If you want to join the conversation, the number's 888-914-9149. Hall of Fame football coach Tony Dungy, right? He gave a talk. I heard his wife's talk. She followed him. You know, when he made the announcement, I think it was Wednesday that he's going to be attending this. This two-time Super Bowl champion, oh my gosh, which people love. He's a good man. He's the adoptive father of, like, I think, 8 kids. I mean, he's just a good man. It's his first time at the rally. People came after this guy like he was a pariah. What do you make of the fact, and they want him taken off of broadcasting, they want him taken off of television, and what do you make of the vitriol, the enmity, the hatred that the left has, those who want to, you know, those who support abortion, have to anybody who says, look, my belief is that this is a child in the womb. Why don't they have the right to continue to keep their job? Why don't they have the right to espouse their views?
No, isn't that astounding, this cancel culture that we live in, Drew? You know, not only wants to cancel the unborn, but it also wants to cancel anybody who dares to speak on their behalf. And as you point out, Tony Dungy has lived his life as a man of integrity who has adopted children. I mean, he is doing all the things that the pro-abortion movement claims that pro-lifers don't do, right?
Yep.
Taking in children, caring for the vulnerable, using his own money, his own family money, to create this family of children, you know, who are not his own biological children. You couldn't ask for a greater role model. And we saw the same thing happen with Jim Harbaugh, who is the former quarterback for the Chicago Bears and is now the head coach at the University of Michigan's football team. And he had the temerity to go and speak at a pregnancy center fundraising dinner. And the same thing happened to him. I mean, there were calls for him to step down as the head coach at the University of Michigan. And this is a man who, in his talk, Drew, to the pregnancy center, said, you know, my wife and I have always said, I say to all my players, everyone on my staff, everyone associated with the University of Michigan football team, if any of you are involved in a pregnancy where you cannot take for that child, my wife and I have a pretty big house. I will take your child.
I love
we will raise your child for you. Always come to me. Do not feel. I mean, so this is a man, again, like Tony Dungy, putting his money where his mouth is. And I, to the University of Michigan's credit, they said, this is a man who is entitled to his own opinions. And there's nothing he did wrong by speaking at this dinner to try to raise money for pregnant women in need. And then, you know, the other side, with its tail between its legs, kind of crept off that the, but it was because the university itself came out and said, no, I'm sorry. He has a right to his own opinions, and he has a right to express them. And we don't cancel people at this university. We allow them to speak.
You know what I think, in some respects, it's a good thing that, you know, there was such a – they kicked the beehive, because, you know, you're highlighting who this man really is and what he represents. So I'm glad that these people spoke out, because it really shows you the character and the quality of the people who really – want to help women and save lives. Mary, thank you for being here. Always good to have you. Thank Barry, too. Thanks for all you do. I know you're on Morning Air a lot, and it's great to have your contribution.
It was such a joy to be able to share some of it with your listeners who couldn't be here. And God bless all of you, and thank you, Drew.
God bless
you. Everything that you're doing to bring attention to this event and to cover it so thoroughly.
Thank you very much, Mary. Good to have you. Okay. It's Mary Fiorito. I've got a getting close to a break. Let me sneak a quick call in. I want to get to Rocco also. He's in Bronx, New York. And I think he's just coming back from the March for Life. Rocco, thanks for calling in. Good afternoon. How was the march?
It was great. It was wonderful. My first time marching, and when I was in high school, that's when they first put Roe versus Wade into effect. And so it took me this long to actually finally get to go to the March for Life. And I went with St. Benedict Parish in the Bronx with Father Bercini. It was a wonderful experience for me.
Well, you took a good day from what I just heard from Mary. The weather was beautiful. I remember I was living in Green Bay, Wisconsin at one point in time, and I actually went to the march. And in Green Bay, you get 57 below zero with wind chill factors and stuff. And, you think it's cold. I went to that march, and it was only like 20 degrees. It was colder in D.C. that day. I don't know, because it was wet or what it was, but You got a great week to be there. I only got a moment or two left. What'd you make of the crowds? How many people were there, Rocco?
I couldn't even tell you. It was like thousands. I really don't. Couldn't even tell. What impressed me was the young kids, and even the Friars from the Friars were there from Harlem, and the Renewal. They were there and they were saying the rosary as they were going, and a lot of groups were saying the rosary as they were marching, and it was a wonderful experience. It was just phenomenal.
Great. Well, I'm glad you went.
It was great.
I'm glad you went.
I just wanted to touch base with you and tell you that there's people out there that. And we support you, and we think you're doing a great job, and we love what you're
doing. Well, thanks, Rocco. I'm so grateful. I'm losing your signal here. Thank you, Rocco. You broke up just a little bit in the end there, but I'm grateful for your call and for your presence down there. I wish every American, I often say there's a couple things everybody should do. One of those is visit a concentration camp. See man's inhumanity to man. You can see the horrors, the true incarnation, the manifestation of evil. That's what you see there. I think every citizen of this great country of ours, those who believe in liberty and freedom and the inalienable right to life, you should make your own pilgrimage to the nation's capital. Yeah, get your buses together, get your parishes, get your schools. We should all converge on there. Talk about a million man watt march, a million woman watt march. We should have 20, 30, 50 million people converge on our nation's capital saying life is sacred. It begins from the moment of conception and should be protected through natural death. Got to take a short pause here. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk more. Feel free to join me. Phones are always open for you. It's 888-914-9149. We got a lot to get into. Don't go away. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus. There you go. That was Chance. That's actually live sound from the day that Roe fell and was overturned. I mean, that very famous Dobbs decision. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, too, because I'm curious as to why the person who perpetrated the leak has never been brought to justice. Got a couple theories on that. If you want to join me, of course, lines are always open to you. We were talking just a few moments ago. Several people from the march actually just called in. If you're there, I'd love to hear from you. You know, the march took a slightly different route than it has over the past 48 years. And I think this is significant. It ended up normally on the steps of the Supreme Court. That's where it always ends. This year, it went past the Capitol, ended up between the Capitol and the court. And that's just to show that the fight now is not with the courts. That battle's over. But it is with the legislature. And, it's with Congress as well. Because, you know, Congress is the one that can pass the laws to protect the lives of the unborn. And the House is going to be considering some bills this session that offer some protections for the unborn. But unless something major happens in both the Senate and the White House, they're not going to get any further than the partisan passage of the House. And that's it. Unfortunately, we've got a pro-death president and a pro-death vice president. And really, if you take a look at the way the House and the way Congress is split, really, majority of Democrats are pro-death. So it's a battle. We need to really vote and put into office men and women who value life. This to me is the preeminent issue. Everything else will flow from this. And, you got states like New York, California, the legislature's there. And even people themselves have voted overwhelmingly to legalize abortion from conception to birth by statute. You know, they want to make it part of their state's constitution. Unfortunately, there are more states that allow abortion in one form or another than states that have outlawed it. And with the Dobbs decision, the pro-abortion force has now become even more vocal than they were before. Some of them are even claiming that abortion is part of the Christian faith. How you make that claim, I don't know. It's an outright lie. But those lies deceive a lot of people. So the question now will become, how will it work at the state level? Even in such hostile places like California, New York, and Illinois, to get even the most minimal protections in place for the unborn. I'm joined right now by Tom Shakley. He serves as Chief Engagement Officer at Americans United for Life and also a research fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. And invited him to stop by to give us his take on all that. Tom, good to have you with me. Thanks for your patience today.
Yeah, it's so good to be with you on a great day for the March for Life.
Amen to that. I mean, I love this day. I think it's wonderful to see so many people come out, and I'm delighted to see the coverage that we're now seeing. I know your organization, AUL, has been fighting for protections on the state level ever since it started 50 years ago, and that's really where the battle is today, right? I mean, there's a war raging. We've won a major battle, that's for sure. Roe v. Wade is now history. What's the strategy now? Where do we go from here? You know, how do you win back in liberal states like California or Michigan, where they enshrine this stuff into their constitution? What's the war look like long term, and what are the next big battles that we're going to fight?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Americans United for Life has been in the fight since the beginning, since 1971, and we see a continuing need to be active at both the federal level and the state level in every state capital, not just at the U.S. Capitol, like you mentioned, where the March for Life ended this year. You know, there's going to be a role to play for Congress to be able to make better decisions about abortion policy. Ultimately, we believe to move America toward a future, and this is going to be a generational fight, but to move America toward a future where abortion is definitively abolished, where abortion is recognized as actually unconstitutional, incompatible with equal justice under the law. So that's kind of the federal fight. But the states, in the meantime, have a major role to play in passing good, life-affirming policy that saves the lives of babies today, that protects women from bad policy, from the predations of the abortion industry, and do more good for families.
You've got a new initiative that I think you've developed with Democrats for Life. And I've often said this, you know, I shared a study I came across a couple of weeks ago, and it showed you Congress and how it was split. 50% of the, you know, the 100% of Republicans were pro-life in it, 100% of Democrats were pro-death. Over on the Senate side, I think it was 80% of Democrats are pro-death, 100% of Republicans are pro-life. So it's, the divide is almost right half. Right. I mean, we're dealing with Democrats for death. You've developed this initiative with Democrats for Life, because I do think we need more Democrats who value life. What are you proposing, and how do we somehow bridge what is, seems like an insurmountable divide?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, our friends over at Democrats for Life, you know, they are recognizing that reality, that the Democrats for Life that are a part of their group are largely on the local level. Unfortunately, as you say, they've been pushed out of the national level, but there are some on the local level. And so we partnered with them at Americans United for Life and put this vision out there. It's got a provocative title. You know, we want to get people talking. We want to get people thinking. It's called Make Birth Free, a vision for Congress to empower American mothers. And this idea of making birth free is all about making pregnancy and birth more feasible, more accessible for families. We recognize, you know, we recognize that nothing's free in this world. But what Make Birth Free is doing is essentially saying that we've had law and policy at the federal level with healthcare law and at the state level with things like Medicare, Medicaid, that does all sorts of good for people, from caring for people with kidney disease, making their treatment free. In other words, publicly funding it so that those with kidney failure are not, have facing these massive five-figure, six-figure bills. And we also do things like include, I mean, unfortunately, this is the bad side. We have all sorts of precedent where the federal government or state governments are funding abortion, contraception, and other things. And so we thought, now that we're in this post-Roe era, why don't we start talking about making birth free? If contraception and abortion are going to be free in some states, let's make birth free. Let's make a birth and pregnancy cheaper than abortion.
It's so true. You know, and I've got a son who he and his wife are fostering a child. They would love to adopt a child. I would love to see mothers say, hey, you know, I'll keep my child. I can afford to do that. Or if they can't, to know that there's viable options out there for people like my son who would love to adopt a child. I often say, we'll take any child, any mother who finds herself pregnant and wants it to go to a good family, you let me know, as Coach Dungy had said and so many others. My frustration also comes on the national plane. I mean, I look at the president, Joe Biden, so frustrating to me. His position on life, and then Kamala Harris, I think it's in Tallahassee today as well, and they push this pro-death agenda. How frustrating are they to you? I mean, do you share that same angst that I do? I mean, you know, whether something comes through the House and Senate, you know, the president's going to veto it if it has anything to do with life.
You know, that's our hope, is that with Make Birth Free, that we can try to chart a way out of this just forest of partisanship that is impacting so many so negatively. You know, we're under no illusions, again, that the fight is going to be resolved tomorrow, that abolition is going to be achieved tomorrow, mm-hmm. or that making birth right. free is going to happen tomorrow. But we think, just as it's taken us 50 years to finally reverse Roe, we should think big and bold about what the next 50 years can be, in a way where, you know, you look at the cost of birth, and this is something, yeah. you know, that many Democrats yeah. Should get behind. We think some will get behind. Yeah. You know, you look at folks like Joe Manchin in West Virginia, or yeah. John Tester out in the West, folks who understand that these are impacting all of us, all of our families, whether they have adoption yeah. in mind or whether they want a parent at home.
Yeah.
The cost of birth is crippling to many families right at a time when they should yeah. be able to invest in their future. And when we look at what it would take to be able to fund that nationally,
yeah.
To both exempt birth and birth-related expenses from private insurance, co-pays, deductibles, and things like that, just the same way yeah. other types of healthcare are, or whether we look at public funding through Medicaid and Medicare.
I love it.
It would be costly, right? It would be, you know, so it would be billions of dollars,
yep.
but it wouldn't be that costly, and it would be worth every penny, especially when you look at what we spend in the federal budget. There are other things we can cut to make birth free. It's very feasible.
Yeah, I was just looking at the end product. Okay, we might pay more money up front, but having a bigger population, you know, it benefits us in the long run. You take a look at the inverted pyramid of those who are at the top now in Social Security. There's so few now paying into it. You know, we need to be open to life.
That's
right. We'll be blessed for it. I'm going to take a few calls. If you're on hold, be patient. I'll get to you in a second. But I want to follow up on one other thing. And this is, I love your campaign to make, you know, life affordable, anybody who wants to have a child. But I know you've got something called the Lincoln Initiative. And I think this is super, I want to get behind this 1,000%. I think this is incredible.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong on it. My understanding is you're calling for an executive order to restore constitutional rights to all human beings. I think that's just genius. Fill everyone in on what this is and how likely that it'll ever come to be.
Yeah, so this is another great initiative from Americans United for Life. We are articulating kind of a litmus test, just like Make Birth Free, we think, should be a litmus test for the next pro-life president. We
yep.
think this Lincoln approach should
it.
Be a litmus test so that the next pro-life president issues an executive order that declares that he has or she has equal constitutional authority to interpret the Constitution, just like the Supreme Court has, just like Congress has. And the president is going to declare that human beings are, in fact, human beings prior to birth, right from that conception moment, and that has massive implications in terms of our law and policy. So this is something the president could do with a stroke of a pen,
yeah.
and it would shift the conversation, shift the Overton window for life.
I love it. Well, first of all, thank you for what you're doing. I'm really grateful for it. Keep up the good fight. If people want to get behind these initiatives or learn more, what's the best way to connect?
You know, visit AUL.org, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and join us in this movement.
I'm very grateful, Tom. Keep up your good work.
Thank you.
That's Tom Shakely. He is Chief Engagement Officer at Americans United for Life. Check him out, AUL.org. That's AUL.org. Let me grab a call or two here, too, as the day continues to tick by. We'll go to, Dr. Paul, who is in... who's in Los Angeles. Doctor, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Mariani. Awesome show, and the
Thank
guest
you.
Was very eloquent. I just have a comment because I'm a practicing pediatrician. When I was on call, they call us for the sick babies and a lot of problems. And when I check them, I bless them with the image of our Lord in the Eucharist.
Oh, wow.
And they all come out awesome.
Wow.
And I just want to give the credit to the Lord.
Wow, that's fantastic, doctor. You know, those mothers you treat are blessed to have you as a pediatrician. I love that.
Thank you.
That is fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, we need good men and women in the field of medicine, you know, and I'm so grateful to hear from you. You give me a lot of hope. Thank you for your call. That's awesome. Jim in Freedom, Wisconsin, thanks for waiting as well. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to share a story my mother shared with me in 1973 when Roe versus Wade happened. She said when she was a young child, a missionary priest from the Providence of Detroit
yep.
visited their parish, and he asked the people to pray so in 50 years, women wouldn't have their babies chopped up and thrown away.
Yeah.
And people at the time thought he was crazy, so they had that priest. They went to the bishop, and they thought there's no way anyone woman would ever do such a thing, which is the abortion process.
Right.
And they had this priest cloistered. He never was able to say Mass again in his whole life. Well, fast forward, my mom and dad get married, and my grandmother must have knew what he was talking about because she sort of had him come out to their farm and play sheep's head all the time. And mom and dad were at their farm one day, and as we were going into World War II, my dad was all worried that he'd be shipped off to World War II. And this priest looked at my dad and said, "Don't worry, you'll never serve in World War II." And sure enough, my dad got his draft notice, went and got his physical, and the doctor looked at him and said, "Nope, you can't go." So my dad ended up serving his country better by staying home because he came up with an idea at a factory in Wausau, Wisconsin that tripled tank tire production.
Oh, my gosh. What a great story, Jim. So, you know, Jimmy, when you're talking about this guy, I've met people who had these mystical gifts, these the ability to the gift of prescience. They can glimpse the future and kind of know. Padre Pio had this, you know, said, as this priest said, "Your father, don't worry about it. You're not going to go." For this priest, 50 years before the before Roe v. Wade in 73, to say we need to pray that this doesn't happen. I mean, clearly he was a priest with the gift of prophecy.
Yeah, the people didn't do what he said. They had him. They went to the bishop, had him cloistered.
Isn't that what happens? These holy men and women so often suffer. You suffer, you suffer, you suffer. Yeah. But in that, I'm sure, came a great power. Jim, thanks for sharing that. I love that. I hope to hear from you again. Incredible story.
Yeah, I think we should all be praying that it keeps moving forward, because next year would be 100 years since that priest warned us.
Usually
it takes 100 years for things to change. Look at slavery. It took 100 years of slavery before we realized that black people are humans just like us. And we had other incidents in our country's history where same things happened. But we had a right or wrong.
Well, I think I think the scales are tilting. I do. I think good always wins. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing the victory of good. It's a slow battle. It takes men and women, men like you and me, to continue to pray, to fast, to do our part. We need good elected leaders. We need good education. We need wholesome families and marriages. I mean, there's so much that goes on. Satan hates the family. He hates marriage. And the byproduct of that, the collateral damage, is this attack on life. I've got to take a very short pause. Stay with me, guys. When I come back, we'll jump back into your phones. Chaplet is about 13 minutes away, and we got a lot to get into today. Always fun to talk with him. I'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. It's the truth and nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, this September, I'm heading the Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Revival Pilgrimage to Italy with Nativity Pilgrimage. This is available to you. Information available at relevantradio.com/Italy.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, let's pray. I really believe prayer changes things. I think it was prayer. I think it was the prayers of the Blue Army that defeated the communism, the atheism, the militants of the Red Army. Of the Soviet Union and all that. So they wanted to strip God, you know, from every corner of society. Today we see the same thing. The rejection of God has brought about the destruction of innocent life. And we need God in our country, right? We need prayer. The Blue Army today, I see Father Rocky praying the rosary across America. I pray the chaplet. We'll be doing that in about 9 minutes. And I think this campaign of Relevant Radio, they have not 500 million memoraries prayed. It's not just us. It's you and your brother and sister all across the country and around the world that are praying. And I see the fruit of it. We've been praying that. Who ever thought that Roe would fall, right? Roe fell. Now we're at a totally different moment in history. But I'll tell you one thing. In the end, just as slavery has become a dark, ugly chapter in our nation's history, so will life. We'll look back. Future generations will think, how the heck could anyone ever think it was okay to kill a child in the womb? That's insane. How could you legislate that? Oh, my gosh, right? It just seems so obvious to me, and yet those who champion it are so blind to that reality. But I think with distance, with time, with prayer, with conversion, I think that perspective will definitely change. All right, let's take a few calls, okay? If you want to join me, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Tim, who is in Union City, New Jersey. Tim, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. You know what? I'm going to tell you firstly, I listen to you every day. Relevant Radio is my favorite station. I'm a devoted atheist, And the reason why I am is because I listen to you. And because you guys pump the same fairy tales, that's your job. Oh, you know, you sell me David and Goliath and Samson and Delilah and Lot. But there's no such thing as an unborn child. That is yet another fairy tale. You're not a child unless you are screaming in your mother's arms and taking a teat into your mouth. Before that, you are a woman, and she has a right to do whatever she likes with her body.
Hey, Tim, let me ask you a question.
If you tell her she has to have that child, whether she likes it or not, or go to jail.
Yeah. Well, Tim, no, nobody said, Tim, first of all, Tim, you're spinning. Tim, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation, okay? First of all, I just want to ask you a very simple question then. If you're not a person until you're born, when does life begin? And so once you come out of the birth canal, then you suddenly become a human being?
No, once you're in a swaddling cloth, once the nurse takes you away from your mom so that she can get some sleep, you are a person. Up until that point, you are nothing. You are a blob of protoplasm.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. Tim, I don't believe you believe that. I don't believe you at all.
Why wouldn't I?
You don't believe because that's ridiculous. Do you believe in science?
How are you saying that's ridiculous?
Do you believe in science?
How is that ridiculous?
Do you believe in science?
Absolutely.
Then look at when life begins, right? Do you believe that?
You can't give rights to the unborn. They can't vote. They can't own guns. They can't drink. There's not a person there. You can't give an unborn person a right to vote. You can't give them rights, period, because there's nothing there.
I don't give anybody rights. I don't give anybody, Tim, I don't give anybody rights. Rights come from God. Right, that's
all right. Be that as it may. God is not a thing.
Our founding
real.
Fathers,
like, that's the Wizard of Oz.
Our founding fathers said that every person, every human being, right, every citizen in this great country has an inalienable right to life, to liberty, and to the pursuit of happiness.
People at the time, because obviously,
well, that's not true. Not every one of our founding fathers shared that view. That's not true.
No, they're actually quite enlightened.
That's not true.
I like the founding fathers. Ben Franklin and Jefferson, they're geniuses, obviously. That's undisputed.
Tim, I love you.
Okay? Let me just say one last thing. If I buy chicken legs and chicken breasts, am I buying a chicken or am I buying chicken parts?
You're buying chicken.
If I sell baby parts.
You're buying chicken, brother. You're buying chicken. I don't care what part of the chicken you eat. It's a chicken.
If I'm buying an egg, am I buying a chicken or am I buying an egg?
Now, that's a good question. You're buying a chicken egg. How's that? It depends what kind of egg you're going to buy.
No, Drew. Let's just be rational. okay? An egg is not a chicken, all right? And a chicken wing is not a chicken.
You've got chicken eggs. You got lots of different eggs, right? It depends where they came from, right?
Well, they don't sell ostrich eggs at the supermarket. Chicken eggs are the standard edible.
Right, so I'm eating a chicken. Egg, right?
Drew, an abortion is a fetus. A fetus is not a person.
No, I disagree with you.
It's garbage. It's medical waste, okay?
Tim, do me a favor. I'll tell you, because we could go around and around here. Do me a favor. Just do some search. I'm assuming you're an intelligent man. You want to be on the right side of this issue, right? So just do search. Find out when life begins, right? Does it begin once somebody has clothing on them, as you point out, that they're swaddled, they're in the hands of somebody? And what's the criteria for that? You know, it's the clothing that they're swaddled in, you know? How far back does it go when they become a human being, right? How far back? And it's kind of ridiculous to think that you're only a human being, not when you come out of the birth canal, but when somebody's holding you and you're swaddled. That's, you know, you got to give me a little bit more than that. Maggie, what were you saying? You're saying an egg is not fertilized.
Well, just saying a chicken egg that you buy at the store is not fertilized, and that's why you're buying it. Otherwise, there would be a tiny chicken in it. but also, Tim, we're going to lift you up during the chaplet. We're going to pray for you and your family. I think the sticky situation you're getting into is that you're allowing another human being to place value on and place judgment on someone else and their worth. We have inherent value, inherent worth, and no one else can determine that for you.
Yeah. You know, I even have problems with the heartbeat pills because I believe life begins before the heart beats, you know? So, and this is really one of those areas when it comes to the discussion of life that we all have to get on the same page on. You've got to determine when life begins. And once you determine when life begins, you know, and if you want to use science for that, you know, when they say life begins, then you really begin to have a discussion about all the rest of this. You know, is it a woman's right to terminate that child? Does that child have an inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? You know, when does it have worth? You know, when it can be swaddled? Well, what about somebody who's really old and they need medical care and treatment in order to stay alive? You know, is there some point where you no longer have worth and then you can be terminated? Maybe it's the kid's turn to say to the parent, see ya. You know what? So you get into such gray and muddled areas. I think we need clear thinking, and I think we need to go back to the earliest point and then begin our discussion from there. Norma in Florida, Miami, good afternoon. Norma, you with me?
Yes, I am. I don't understand how can turtle eggs have more rights than a baby. It's a federal law. It's a federal offense to grab those eggs.
You know, I love that, Norma. It's a great point, and we'll leave it on that. I got the chaplet coming right up. I'm out of time for this segment, but more conversation straight ahead.